the joint session of the 61st Wyoming Legislature budget session will please come to order. Senator Bebout and Representative Semlick and Korberg will please escort the First Lady of Wyoming, Carol Mead, and their children, Mary and Pete, and His Excellency, the Governor of the State of Wyoming, Matthew H. Mead, to this joint session. The body will be at ease until the sound of the gavel. Sergeant of Arms.
Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, it is my pleasure to announce the following guests. The Honorable Nancy D. Friedenthal, Chief United States District Judge for the District of Wyoming, escorted by Senator Martin and Representatives Dan Zwanitzer and Freeman. The Honorable Clarence A. Brimmer, Senior United States District Judge for the District of Wyoming, escorted by Senator Christensen and Representative Davison and Bonner. Honorable Scott W. Skovdahl, United States District Judge for the District of Wyoming, escorted by Senator Cooper and Representative Blickery and Connolly. The Honorable Michael Golden, Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court, escorted by Senator Nicholas and Representatives Peterson and Greer. The Honorable William U. Hill, Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court, escorted by Senator Coe and Representatives Miller and Barbudo. The Honorable Barton R. Voigt, Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court, escorted by Senator Peterson, Representatives Brown and Petroff. The Honorable E. James Burke, Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court, escorted by Senator Emmerich, Representatives Kasparic and Escobel. The Honorable Cindy Hill, State Superintendent of Public Instruction, escorted by Senator Bernard, Representatives Reeder and Blake. The Honorable Joe Meyer, State Treasurer, escorted by Senator Landon, and Representatives Botten and Kraft. The Honorable Cynthia I. Cloud, State Auditor, escorted by Senator Nothing, Representative Croker, and Throne. The Honorable Max Maxfield, Secretary of State, escorted by Senator Johnson, and Representatives Peasley and Byrd. The Honorable Marilyn S. Kite, Chief Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court, escorted by Senator Rothfuss, Representatives Green and Burkhart. The First Lady of Wyoming, Carol Meade, their children Mary and Pete, and His Excellency, the Governor of the State of Wyoming, Matthew H. Meade, escorted by Senator Bebout, Representatives Semlich and Korberg.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm glad it's over, sir.
I would like to invite Father Thomas Conkleton to please give the invocation.
And let us pray. Almighty and eternal God, we gather today in this chamber from the four corners of this great state of Wyoming to begin this budget session of the 61st Wyoming Legislature, and to hear the state of the state and the state of the judiciary. We have before us just 20 days to do the work of the people of this great state. Our primary task is to address the budget and the financial needs that we have. Help us to see the abundance with which we are blessed, so that as we address our needs, we do not so from a view of what we lack, but from the wealth of what we have. Be with us also as we address the secondary issues before us, a reapportionment, and the various legislation that will be introduced. We ask, therefore, that you pour forth your divine assistance upon our governor, the secretary of state, the auditor, the treasurer, the superintendent of public instruction, the members of the judiciary, the members of the House and the Senate, and all their support staff. King Solomon, when he began his rule, prayed not for power, nor for wealth, nor for a long life, but rather he prayed for wisdom to govern and act wisely. Grant our leaders the heart of Solomon. Give unto them that same gift of wisdom to govern and act wisely, particularly when they are faced with the difficult decisions that will be presented in this session. Help them to work for the common good of the people of this great state of Wyoming, and let them have a special concern for the poor and the most disadvantaged in our land. We ask this in all things in your holy name. Amen.
Members of the 61st Legislature, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, I present His Excellency, the Governor of the State of Wyoming, Matthew H. Meade.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks very much.
What a wonderful welcome. Thank you very much. I am pleased to have my family with me again this year. As you may recall, last year it was Pete's birthday, and he was so pleased that this didn't end on his birthday this year. He was very worried about me saying that again. Welcome to my family, Carol, Mary, Pete. Glad to have you with me, as always. Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, members of the 61st Wyoming Legislature, Secretary Maxfield, Auditor Cloud, Treasurer Meyer, Superintendent Hill, Chief Justice Kite, members of the judiciary, citizens of Wyoming, good morning. Thank you again for the warm welcome and for the prayer to start these proceedings. And welcome to members of the Eastern Shoshone and Northern Arapaho Tribe that traveled with the reservation from the reservation to be with us today. And I thank you also for your continued work with my office in a cooperative effort. Treasurer Meyer, a special welcome to you and Mary. We are so glad to have you with us. We're glad to have you both with us, and we're so pleased about your quick recovery. Some 13 months ago, I had the privilege of delivering my first State of the State address as Wyoming's 32nd governor. This morning represents another first for me, the first State of the State during a budget session. What is the condition of Wyoming? We start with that condition, with that question. How is Wyoming doing? Well, while other places face extreme revenue shortfalls and severe budget constraints, Wyoming does not. The nation continues to be plagued with high unemployment, still north of 8%. In contrast, while Wyoming's unemployment rate in winter 2010 was 7.5%, it has been under 6% since June 2011 and stands at 5.8% by latest reports. Wyoming is strong in employment. After visiting with Secretary Salazar last February in Washington, D.C. about delays in coal leases, we had 5 coal lease sales this past year, including some record sales in terms of price. We remain number one in trona production. We have 70% of the world supply of bentonite. We are number one in coal production. We are number one in uranium reserves. And year in and year out, we either are number one or number two in natural gas production. These resources equate to tremendous value. The total value for minerals produced in Wyoming hit $15.5 billion in 2010, the second best year ever, and up 23% since 2009. Wyoming remains strong in minerals. Tourism, even in lean time, continues to be a strong contributor to our economy. In 2011, record revenues were generated by travel in Wyoming. We have world-class views, world-class recreation, and world-class hunting. Such assets make us a great tourist destination with millions every year enjoying what only Wyoming has to offer. Wyoming remains strong in tourism. Agriculture continues to do well. Livestock prices this past year were a tremendous boost to producers and to all of Wyoming. Wyoming remains strong in ag. Small businesses are job creators. Wyoming, for the past 4 years, has fewer failures in small business than almost any other state. Wyoming remains strong in small businesses. During a time when so many had credit ratings drop, our state's credit rating went up. In May 2011, Wyoming joined only a handful of other states to receive Standard & Poor's highest AAA credit rating. Conservative budgeting and forecasting practices were cited for the upgrade. A report from the Tax Foundation recently put Wyoming at the top, number one of its indexes of states with good tax climates. We have over $14 billion in assets and could build on savings again this year while continuing to invest in our future success through wise appropriation. Wyoming remains strong financially. Now, you may know that every year a report ranks states to determine how well they are run. The recent report ranking states is good news for Wyoming. Now, this is not due to my work, but rather it is due to the work of the private sector, this legislative body, past administrations, public employees, and Wyoming citizens who commit to remain fiscally conservative. The report noted that Wyoming has the fourth lowest rate of violent crimes and the sixth lowest rate in unemployment. The report also cited the highest percent of our adult population, aged 25 years or older, that are high school graduates. At 92.3%, our state ranks first in the nation. Our strength in employment, minerals, tourism, ag, small business, and financial stability have once again caused Wyoming to be rated as the best run state in the nation. Congratulations, Wyoming. When we ask the question, how are we doing? I am pleased to report the state of the state is strong. Now, beyond the picture painted by these figures and reports, we have small businesses that are thriving, teachers that are innovating, community colleges, and a university that continue to advance. We have a citizenry that, while small in numbers, is big in spirit and accomplishment. Hardworking citizens in every sector make our state strong. Our communities are a source of great pride, and we want them to have what they need to compete and to prosper. After all, we remember that it's on Main Street where businesses grow and jobs are created, not in the Capitol building. Funding for communities and infrastructure are a high priority, even with a special budget discipline we have to exercise this year. We don't want to be penny wise and pound foolish. We have sufficient resources to save wisely, invest wisely in our communities and our infrastructure, and at the same time make necessary reductions in budget growth. Just as homeowners don't wait for the roof to fall in to fix it, we should not wait to fix and enhance our critical infrastructure, roads, landfills, water systems, the like. We invest for the future through careful saving and careful spending. I believe my budget recommendations strike the right balance. Now, despite the many areas of good news, we also know that not everyone in Wyoming is doing well. We also know we're not a bank that just cares about the bottom line, and we know we are not an island. We have seen economic instability grow and spread across Europe. We have watched debt mount at the national level. We have observed the effects of an unstable global economy. We absorb this news because we are not insulated from developments outside our state's borders. We feel the effects of what happens around us. For example, the effects of lower natural gas prices. National and global uncertainties and energy price fluctuations require us to redouble our efforts to keep the economic recovery going and growing in Wyoming. Jobs and the economy must remain top priorities. Therefore, we must continue to look for ways to diversify our economy, and we have made some headway. The NCAR facility in Cheyenne will house a 1 petaflop supercomputer. A petaflop, for those of you that don't know, is equal to 1 quadrillion computer operations per second. For those of you who don't know what a quadrillion is, let me just say when it comes to explaining this, the petaflop measurement is so new and so big that your spell checker will keep wanting to spell belly flop. From bytes to petaflops, we have come a long way in computer technology. And with the supercomputer, Wyoming is in the thick of things. Wyoming's weather, energy availability and affordability, and location on major east-west and north-south highways and rail lines make our state a good fit for tech and other like businesses. In this regard, state government must set an example of leadership and use of information technology, IT. We must expand our use of teleconferencing. We must have a single agency in state government that consolidates IT services. Senate File 33 goes a long ways in taking us there. I was pleased to announce last year, for the first time, we managed through cloud computing to get state employees on the same email system. This cloud computing system provides for greater collaboration. This move to a new system provides savings and increased security. Among other things, cloud computing makes our email a stronger tool by providing for the first time an easy method for every state employee to email any state employee and for the public to do likewise. The backbone of IT technology is broadband. When I took office, the state's major broadband provider had only two towns in Wyoming capable of high-speed gigabit broadband. Thanks to a public-private partnership, this company expanded this capability to an additional 18 Wyoming communities. We've increased the reach of this level of high-speed connectivity to our schools this past year by more than 250%. We must continue our work with additional public-private partnerships with both large and small companies to expand IT in Wyoming. To further this effort, I have asked to carry over $15 million from last year's appropriations for recruitment of tech-related businesses and data centers, and I support an additional $15 million. But funding for technology, while essential, is not enough by itself to diversify our economy and build businesses and jobs. Education will be key to this effort. As home to some of the world's mightiest computing power, we are looking ways to increase our opportunities for Wyoming in the area of science, technology, engineering, and math, STEM. The economic drivers of our state demand workers with knowledge and skills in these four important fields. Just last week, over 100 educators and businesses came together in a STEM summit to explore options and move forward. We will continue to push STEM education. In Wyoming, we are blessed with wonderful natural resources. It is our people, however, that secure our future. We know every child is a blessing, and the well-being of our children determines the well-being of our state. Providing the best education in a safe environment goes a long way to expanding our children's horizons. In partnership with the Wyoming Business Alliance and the Wyoming Heritage Foundation, I co-hosted a business forum in Cheyenne for a day and a half this last November. We heard business success stories about the McMurray family, about Mountain Meadow Wool, and about a businesswoman this group knows very well, Lisa Shepperson, in addition to many others. We had national speakers there, and one of the national speakers from Pfizer crafted his speech around a top 10 list of things Wyoming needed to improve upon in order to lead in economic development. The top 5 items in his list were number 5, education. Number 4, education. Number three, education. Number two, education. Number one, wait for it, education. As I meet teachers from all over the state, I recognize our good fortune in the quality of educators, and it continues to improve. I also recognize we have not yet got the results that we want. We need to do better. Wyoming and the legislature have shown their strong financial commitment to education. Year in and year out, we have shown that strong financial commitment. We need now to show commitment to a strong and consistent message. Administrators and teachers have grown frustrated with mixed messages, changing ideas on testing, and shifting views. The public grows weary of debate without direction. We need a direction that provides consistency. We need continuity that survives elections and politicians that come and go. While education is complex, we should all agree on a fundamental goal that carries forth and drives future decisions. The goal that I seek agreement on is this. Wyoming should strive to have a K through 12 system that is second to none. We ask ourselves, is this possible? I believe it is. And frankly, I worry much less about setting the bar too high and more about setting it too low. Wyoming kids have to compete on a global scale. Nothing but the best education will do. We need accountability in our schools. We need accountability in our parents. And with every decision, all of us should make it known that mediocrity is not acceptable. We don't need to push all students into a four-year university. Career and technical education programs are perfectly viable alternatives. Likewise, not everyone has to go to a traditional public school. Religious schools, home schools, virtual schools, and charter schools can provide innovative ideas and alternatives to parents. But whether public school or not, all of our kids need a top-notch K-12 education that prepares them for the future. To ratchet up the quality, we need more rigorous standards. Common Core standards have been debated and they've been discussed. I ask for more public participation and more comment in the process of their consideration. This too has been done. Now is the time, without regard to what federal government may want us to do or not want us to do, for us to step up, refuse to be left behind, and accept Common Core standards as determined by Wyoming citizens. We are not, in doing this, signing on with federal curriculum. These are Wyoming standards. We are signing on to a better future for our children by demanding more rigorous standards. If the federal government tries to steer us in a direction we don't want to go, we can simply refuse. There is no federal hook. There is no federal hook that will push us from Wyoming law or Wyoming standards. Wyoming law and Wyoming standards will control. I believe we have the resources, the talent, and the opportunity to move forward for higher standards. Our education system needs them. Our Wyoming kids deserve them. An example of talent is Brent Daly from Gillette. Brent is Wyoming's Teacher of the Year. Brent stands out as a humble, passionate, and caring educator. He delights in seeing his students grow through their experience in his science classroom, through student council, and through numerous activities he sponsors in the Gillette community. People who know Brent speak of him in superlatives, such as he is the rarest of teachers. He wants the best for his students. He is the most inspiring. One student wrote that his experience in Brent's chemistry class and Brent's encouragement led him to pursue studies in the field of chemical engineering. Brent is with us today. Brent, please stand up and let us thank you for your contributions to educational excellence. As I wrote my budget message, the state budget must acknowledge the limits of government. we must be good stewards of public dollars, recognizing that while we may not be able to meet all the wishes of today, we must strive to meet all the needs of tomorrow. The budget I submitted in December was balanced and trimmed our sails. In January, after the report of our consensus revenue estimating group, Craig, I went back to the drawing board. The January report forecast a significant reduction, about $113 million lower over the next 2 years. The lower forecast was mainly based on estimates of natural gas prices, which Craig revised downwards from $4 per MCF due to the large supplies and mild weather. We should all be aware that natural gas prices have been stuck in the mid-$2 range for some time, and the $3.25 Craig forecast may be overly optimistic. Based upon the revised estimates, I reduced my original budget by about $64 million to take into account the latest forecast. The budget revisions I submitted in January, together with my original proposal, produced a balanced budget, allow for savings, and take a strategic approach to reducing the budget. At the same time, I have not recommended deep across-the-board cuts to agencies. Instead, I used a targeted approach, identifying those areas where we could slow or even reduce growth. Some cuts have been made, but we should distinguish between cuts and reducing growth. There is a real difference. Slowing growth, which is what my budget focuses on, is not a cut. For Wyoming to continue to be strong, we must ask what are those things that have made us strong and what we must do to nurture those areas. Wyoming has remained strong because we are an agricultural state. Agriculture was key in the creation of our state and remains a part of our rich heritage, culture, and economy. The well-being of our state requires the well-being of ag. Now, I admit a bias in this area, but my bias does not just come from my ag background. It comes from a sense of all that ag provides to Wyoming. Ag does much more than just support ag families. Ag gives a boost to implement dealers, fertilizer folks, local pickup dealers, and more. Ag supports our two largest industries, minerals and tourism. In Wyoming, there are 11,000 ranches and farms, representing the largest ranch size of anywhere in the U.S. These 11,000 large ranches and farms equate to open space, clean air, clean water, and wildlife habitat. Our ranches and farms provide the lure for tourism, for recreation, and for untold opportunities for energy development. Ag land provides a shield against action by the federal government regarding endangered species. These lands also provide sportsmen with unforgettable experiences. We need to make sure ag thrives because it is the stage, it is the platform for so many value-added economic opportunities. Ag adds quality to our life experience as Wyoming citizens that goes far beyond just economics. With federal grazing leases being threatened, with predation and disease concerns, with fear of the next listing of endangered species, with changing economic conditions, with inheritance tax issues, some of our longtime family ranches are faced with an uncertain future. It's also becoming much more difficult to get and keep young people in the ag industry. This is an issue for Wyoming and it's an issue for our country. We need to make sure all options are open for ag's future. And for some families, conservation easements are a preferred alternative to selling out. The Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust plays a role in easements and is part of the picture in ensuring a strong future for ag in Wyoming. This trust was an independent state agency established in 2005. In its 7 years, the trust has completed projects in all 23 Wyoming counties. More than 323 projects have been done to date. Over $35 million from the trust have been allocated for these projects. Matching contributions from other sources have brought total expenditures to about $200 million. Not surprisingly, a recent report shows the benefits from the trust projects include economic ones. A December report from UW estimates the trust generated more than 500 jobs annually and nearly $21 million in labor earnings in Wyoming since 2006. Whether you hunt or fish, whether you are a stock grower or stock broker, or just a person who relishes the outdoors and all it offers in Wyoming, our quality and way of life are tied to successful conservation efforts. I have included funding for the Wildlife Natural Resource Trust in my budget recommendations and asked for support of this funding for ag, for conservation, for tourism, and for energy, all a big part of Wyoming's future. Outside of my budget recommendations, I'm asking for your support on my proposed wolf plan. After years of court battles, where every year the number of wolves increases by about 10%, where we have lost the ability to manage that which belongs to us, our wildlife, where wolves threaten ag, wildlife, and outfitters, it is time to move forward. We must accept the fact, if Wyoming is to have wolves, and it is clear that we are, we have to have a scientifically sound approach that gives us management and the ability to have a balance in terms of numbers. If we do not move forward, we diminish our state's rights and miss an opportunity to achieve greater balance. Now, I understand some disagree with my plan. Instead, believing a solution lies in the hands of a few judges, and we should continue in the courts. Now, we have made some good, and we have made some not so good results in the courts. But no court decision has led to on-the-ground changes, and time is not on our side. Every year we fail to manage wolves, the number of wolves increases. As for me, I would rather have this body take a proactive approach than hope for the best in the courts. I don't know what the future court decisions may be, but it seems less than a good plan to me to introduce, it seems less than a good plan to continue into a third decade in the courts, where to date we have not gained the ability to manage wolves, the numbers keeps going up, and the only proven winners to date have been the attorneys and the wolves. Just so we're clear, they are not one and the same. I acknowledge, unlike Montana and Idaho, we have not yet received congressional approval of our plan. Of course, we learned that despite congressional approval, Montana and Idaho were both promptly sued. And in fairness for Congress, I think it was a hard lift for them to give us blanket approval to a plan that had yet to be peer-reviewed or even made law by Wyoming. If this plan is approved, I will work with our very able congressional delegation and others to seek congressional approval of a plan that I remind you that both the Secretary of Interior and the Director of Fish and Wildlife have already approved. More importantly to me, and more importantly to Wyoming, the Wyoming Stock Growers, the Wyoming Wool Growers, the Farm Bureau Federation, the Wyoming Outfitters and Guides, and Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife have also endorsed the plan. Getting all those people to agree on anything, let alone this thing, is a heavy lift, and I thank each one of those groups for their leadership and help in getting it done. Ag is important. Ag is important to me. It's important to Wyoming. It's important to our country. In addition to all the benefits, collateral benefits ag provides, our country needs the security that comes from being able to feed our citizens. Now, on a lighter note, if we cannot stay in ag state, it's hard to have a bronc on our quarter, our license plates, and those wonderful UW helmets and jerseys. Moreover, how can we continue to have people like Jet Johnson, a sixth-generation rancher, a cancer survivor, a rodeo star without ag? Ladies and gentlemen, join me in welcoming Jet Johnson, this year's world champion team roper from Casper, Wyoming. Jet. Jet is part of Team Wyoming, and he proved in Las Vegas that there is no one better, no one in the world. Jet, we are pleased to have you here, and you may be interested to know that I, too, was a team roper. But putting the two of us in the same room together is like putting matter and antimatter together. I was the world's worst. You're the world's best. Congratulations, Jet. Thanks for making us proud. Wyoming remains strong because we're a tourism state. I recently wrote a message for our state highway map about climbing Wyoming's impressive peaks and exploring our state's parks, or just kicking back and taking in our state's incredible beauty. Wyoming has so many places and vistas that lift the spirit, satisfy the adventurous, soothe the soul, and our citizens are ready with a smile and welcoming hands. Tourists enthusiastically respond to all Wyoming has to offer. Numerous budget recommendations, for example, for the Tourism Board, Game and Fish, State Parks and Cultural Resources, the Wildlife Trust, Board of Outfitters, directly or indirectly support tourism. I would ask this body for its continued great support of Wyoming's second largest industry. Wyoming has remained strong because we are an energy state. Wyoming is an energy state. More accurate would be to say Wyoming is the energy state. Aren't we proud that compared to all 50 states, we are the number one exporter of British thermal units, BTUs. Every single Wyoming citizen enjoys and benefits from what mineral development provides. The Wyoming Taxpayer Association estimates minerals directly and indirectly contribute up to 80% of the state's revenues. We want our mining and oil and gas industry to remain strong. To keep the energy sector strong, we must seek to ensure longevity for those industries and maximize the benefit of production. We should encourage value-added projects that, in addition to adding value, give us new technologies, new efficiencies, and cleaner uses of our raw products. This is why I asked for $6 million in funding for enhanced oil recovery. This is why I support looking at projects from coal to liquids, from natural gas to liquids, and why I support a move to allow Wyoming, rather than the federal government, to regulate greenhouse gases. This is also why in my budget I have asked for strong funding for the School of Energy Resources. $20.4 million for the regular and continued operations of the school, $10 million to implement new strategic areas of concentration, $10 million for energy partnership matching funds, $2 million to begin a CO2 pipeline network, and $1 million matched by external funds for continuity of carbon storage and other research. I am pleased to see the Appropriations Committee added another $5 million. Wyoming should not be viewed just as a place to get the product, but also as a place to get the technology and intellectual value as well. We can do this with continued robust support of the University of Wyoming and our community colleges and partnering with the private sector on new innovative projects. And Wyoming must develop a sound energy policy that recognizes the value of development and the value of conservation. The fact is, America needs all energy sources, and Wyoming has the ability to provide energy now and in the future, as long as we maintain a balance to development that recognizes all that we love about Wyoming. We also know in Wyoming we have a long, long history of energy companies and individuals in the energy sector who have given back to their communities and to the state. All of us can name many of these individuals without much effort. But today I want to introduce one of many Wyoming energy producers who gives back, Maurice Brown from Cheyenne. As a boy, Maury made money shining shoes, and selling newspapers. Instead of going to college, he helped his parents run a grocery store. Today, however, in Laramie County and beyond, it is the rare charity event where Maury is not only in attendance, but donating to the cause. He supports 4-H, FFA, Meals on Wheels, Salvation Army, YMCA, the Animal Shelter, COMEA, Safe House, and many other worthy causes. He buys University of Wyoming football tickets for kids who cannot afford them, and even rents a bus and buys lunch for the kids at the game. Maury is a Wyoming man, a businessman, an energy man, whose business success is only surpassed by his generosity. Maury, please stand and let us recognize you as we recognize all the folks from Energy who give to Wyoming. Small business entrepreneurs are driving forces in Wyoming and America. Wyoming is strong because of the many small businesses that thrive here. According to the most recent information provided in January by the Small Business Administration, SBA, small businesses totaled over 58,000 in Wyoming in 2009. Based on this report, small businesses represented about 96% of our employers and employed over 64% of our private sector workforce. The SBA reported that these businesses are central to Wyoming's health and well-being. The ingenuity, work ethic, and can-do attitude of those engaged in our small businesses reminds us of what made this country great. In Jackson, Wyoming, Ashley Watson started Mountains of Groceries a little over 4 years ago. For the first year, Mountains of Groceries was a web-based grocery delivery service. Through Ashley's hard work, the business grew beyond grocery store grocery delivery to other services, like custom gift baskets, party planning, and more. As the business has grown, Ashley has kept her customer service her highest priority. But it is also her priority to give back to Wyoming. Ashley donates a percentage of her profit back to the community for conservation efforts, as well as providing leftover food to the needy. In 2011, Ashley was recognized as the SBA Young Entrepreneur of the Year. Congratulations, Ashley. Thank you for representing young people and small businesses so well. Please stand so we may acknowledge you. For years, Wyoming has suffered from drought. We wish for the drought to end, and we got more than we wished for last year. We had such an excess of moisture and runoff that landslides occurred, streams became swollen and dangerous. Highways were flooded and closed. Agricultural lands were affected, and communities were at risk. This presented a significant challenge, not only because of the magnitude of the runoff, but also because the problem was not localized. It affected the entire state, with some areas being hit harder than others. Now, I took a novel approach and called out the guard before the flooding hit. I issued a state disaster declaration early on, and the president followed with a federal one. The guard and our Office of Homeland Security were hard at work at our side throughout the disaster. The Department of Corrections, the Wyoming Department of Ag, the Wyoming Department of Transportation, local volunteers, and others pitched in. The Corps of Engineers and FEMA provided resources and materials. Towns and counties mobilized local resources as well. The state handled the challenge posed by last year's spring flooding very well. And thanks to the planning effort, when a flood-related event occurred, we were able to address the situation quickly. As it was, estimates for flood-related repairs to highways are over $31 million. This figure shows the order of magnitude of the damages, even with the state's effective response to the situation. And our thoughts and prayers remain with those who were most affected by the flooding, where the losses are permanent, where lives were lost. It is an example of the strength of our Wyoming communities, of how they responded to these floods. A mayor of one of our local communities, John Zeger of Saratoga, is here today. Mayor Zeger, in responding to a call to assistance as a county emergency coordinator, was injured when his vehicle was swept away at the same site where four people lost their lives. With water rising around him, he did not think he would see his family again. He was rescued and said he felt fortunate to be alive. As our emergency responders and law enforcement officers often do, Mayor Zeger put himself in harm's way, thinking of others before thinking of himself. Mayor, please stand and let us thank you for your service. General Luke Reiner, the Adjutant General of the Wyoming National Guard, is another person high on the list of those who give of themselves in service to others. As I mentioned, General Reiner and the Guard helped immensely during the flooding last year. The Guard has also continued to be deployed in Afghanistan and elsewhere, doing an incredible job. And the fact is, no country has ever been better served or made more proud by a military than America. So while we thank General Reiner and the Guard, let's take time to thank all the men and women who have served or are serving in the armed forces. Military, General Reiner, the Guard, thank you very much for what you do. We know we can always count on our military in emergencies and in defense matters, and we sure appreciate all that they do. I'll end today where I started, with the budget. We know that the federal role in the budget is diminished for the most part. And for the most part, I have not sought to replace federal dollars, with the principal exception being Medicaid. We recognize that the standard budget has more than doubled over the last decade and cannot continue on this trajectory over the next decade. I have made a number of one-time requests for this biennium because such a strategy requires review on a regular basis, reduces the opportunity for creeping growth, and increases transparency. I support $15 million in funding to the Municipal Solid Waste Landfill account. I asked for about $168 million for communities and infrastructure spending for both new construction and maintenance effort. I believe that is one of the highest priorities for Wyoming, for our towns and our counties at this time. I've also asked for $100 million of new dollars for our highways. I, of course, asked money for savings. But I also recognize that not all issues have been resolved. Additional discussion, additional debate is needed regarding the Department of Health, from emergency detention dollars to Medicaid funding. I also recognize that there are others debate out there. A legitimate case has been made for raises for judges, janitors, and others. We have to make a decision, and in making the decision on what, if any, raises are given, we must be guided by past considerations given, sustainability, and fairness. I also ask for your support for the Pavilion Water Solution effort and for worker safety. As we work through all of these issues, I remind you that my door remains open. I want to say it has been such an incredible honor to serve the state this past year. Carol and I and our children, Mary and Pete, have met so many gracious, interesting, talented people. We've attended so many wonderful community functions, and we feel blessed to have the opportunity to serve as Wyoming's first family. Wyoming is on the right track. We are a state that has proven we can still guide our future. We can solve our problems better than Washington can, and we can do it in a way that is better for Wyoming. We will produce a budget. We will produce a budget, something that has not been done in Washington in over 1,000 days. And we will produce a balanced budget, something not accomplished in D.C. for far too long. I have mentioned that we are the best-run state. We must make certain that Wyoming's legacy does not only have the title of the best managed state, but that every child, every family, and every business is managing the best, doing the best. Working together, I know Wyoming can continue to be the best both in title and in reality. Thank you, and may God bless the United States and this wonderful state of Wyoming.
Governor Meade, on behalf of the members of the legislature, I thank you for attending this joint session and for your message to us. So thank you very much. Members of the 61st Legislature and the distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, I now present the Honorable Marilyn S. Kite, Chief Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for that warm welcome. Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, Governor and Mrs. Meade, members of the 61st Legislature, elected officials and members of the judiciary, and citizens of the state of Wyoming, it is an honor to speak to you today on behalf of those who serve in the judicial branch of this state's government. Thank you, President Anderson and Speaker Buchanan, for the invitation to do so. While the duties and responsibilities of each of the three separate and independent branches of government are different, we share the obligation to serve the public with honor and dedication to our Constitution. We are fortunate in Wyoming that the three branches of government show each other mutual respect. Sadly, that is not often true in the rest of our country. And once again, things are different and better in Wyoming. I speak for all the members of the judiciary when I wish you all the energy and wisdom that you will need as you address the difficult issues ahead of you in this session. We know you are anxious to get started, and I promise I won't keep you long. The faces of Wyoming's judiciary have changed since I reported to you last year. Longtime clerk of the Supreme Court, Judy Pacheco, known to many of you, retired last week. She has certainly been the friendly face of the court, providing assistance to lawyers and citizens alike for many years, and we will miss her greatly. We are pleased that the eminently qualified deputy clerk, Carol Thompson, will take the reins of that office and provide leadership as this branch of government continues its transition into the digital age. Sadly, we lost retired Supreme Court Justice Walter Urbikite, who also served as a distinguished member of this body. And we will honor him later in May at a special memorial session of the Supreme Court. He will be remembered as a dedicated public servant and a stalwart defender of the constitutions of our state and nation. I would be remiss if I did not mention that this will be the 23rd and last joint session that Justice Michael Golden will attend as a member of the Supreme Court. He is facing the mandatory retirement age of 70 contained in our Constitution, a provision that you recently considered removing, and we would urge you to do just that. No other state government position is limited in such a way. And many of us are now realizing just how young that is and how much many of us can contribute after that age. We don't want to think about how much we're going to miss Justice Golden's wit and wisdom, and we will certainly take the opportunity to celebrate and honor him in the upcoming year. To update you on the projects I mentioned last year, the Wyoming Center for Legal Aid is up and running. After the increase in the dollar threshold for the circuit courts, which you passed last year, we adopted simplified rules for those smaller cases, and 1,000 new cases were handled by those courts without any increase in staff. The Supreme Court IT department has developed and implemented electronic payment of fines in all our circuit courts, which has resulted in over $3 million coming into state and local governments 24 hours a day from all over the world. We are hoping that the Highway Patrol will finish its side of the electronic citation effort, and we can begin receiving citations electronically this summer. Our district court case management system will also be rolled out this summer. This session, you will be addressing in Senate File 26, a Joint Judiciary Committee bill providing for a new judge in Johnson County. The 4th Judicial District, which includes Johnson County and Sheridan County, is the only single-judge district in our state. Economic development and population growth in that area has resulted in an increasing caseload that is much more than one judge can handle. The Board of Judicial Policy and Administration strongly supports that legislation and believes that the citizens of that area are in need of additional judicial services that one judge cannot provide. As we all know, our democracy requires educated and involved citizens who understand the fundamental structure of our government. Without that, public trust and confidence are at risk. National surveys show that 2/3 of our citizens cannot identify the 3 branches of government, let alone describe their respective responsibilities, and 1/3 cannot name any. Fewer than 1/3 of 8th graders, this is nationally, could not identify the historical purpose of the Declaration of Independence. 15% of adults could correctly name the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, while twice as many, 27%, could identify the judges on American Idol. Last year, our Supreme Court learned about a project called iCivics. It was conceived of and initiated by retired Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. And among other things, it has developed video games aimed at middle school students to teach players how to write legislation, act as president, and argue a case in front of the Supreme Court. We have worked with the governor's office and with the legislative service office to bring that project to Wyoming. And this Thursday, the three branches of Wyoming's government will introduce iCivics to over 50 Wyoming educators from around the state. They will also have the unique opportunity that we're very excited about to enjoy a live video conference with Justice O'Connor herself. I would invite you to attend, but I'm afraid it's already a standing room only crowd. We are confident that Wyoming students will not be among those who are misinformed about their government. Although there is a natural tension between our 3 branches of government, most of the time it's good-natured, this kind of effort shows that we can and do work together. And this brings me to the main reason that you are all here this year, and that is the budget. In the judiciary, we know these are difficult and challenging times for our country and our state. We see on a daily basis the consequences of economic hardship. You are facing many tough choices about how to fund governmental services, and it is critical that we communicate to you the needs of the judicial branch and ask for the funding necessary to deliver equal justice for all of our citizens. Keep in mind that the judicial branch is small, only 51 judges, 240 employees, and 2% of the state budget. Our primary needs are technology and salaries. On the technology front, we are pleased that JAC has recommended approval of the funds necessary to finish our electronic docketing system, in which you and we have already invested so much. We are confident that that system will pay off with more efficient and cost-effective delivery of justice. With regard to salaries, we have 2 issues, staff salaries and judicial salaries. You will recall that you granted a market salary increase of over $7 million for the executive branch last year. Because our salaries had not undergone a review by your consultant, the Hay Group, we used their method to estimate last year that it would take about $600,000 annually to bring our employees to 91% of market. You appropriated that $600,000 conditioned upon our completion of a Hay study. However, for the first time in history, we believe, a footnote required the governor to improve the expenditure of judicial branch appropriations. Both we and the governor agreed that this condition was unconstitutional and breached the requirement of separation of powers. And therefore, he vetoed that portion of the budget, resulting in the $600,000 flowing into the executive branch, which we understand was then doubled for this upcoming biennium. In the past year, we undertook that Hay study at your direction and at the cost of $57,000. and it demonstrated that our estimate last year was a little low and that 800,000 was needed to bring our employees to 91% of market. It was our firm understanding that the JAC intended in this session to correct that situation created last year and treat judicial branch employees equitably. Accordingly, we were distressed to learn that in the final throes of the budget markup, our staff salary was first cut in half and then eliminated completely. Apparently, the reasoning was that other state employees were not getting salary increases this year, and it was only fair if the judicial employees did not get raises. Fair? To us, that's a little like saying in the third quarter of the recent Super Bowl, when the Patriots were in the lead, the officials decided to change the rules and eliminate the fourth quarter. Don't worry, we're treating everybody the same and it's fair. I don't think the Giants would agree, and we didn't either. Fairness does not ignore history. The executive branch got a raise last year. In fact, they sort of got our raise too. And now an entry-level attorney can go to work for the Attorney General's office for $4,000 more than they can go to work for the Supreme Court. We are certainly not saying that those in the executive branch did not deserve a raise last year, but were they more worthy than judicial employees? Of course not. In fact, if you don't correct the inequity, it will be the first time in our memory, anyway, that you intentionally provided inferior pay to the judicial branch, and we implore you to restore those funds to our budget and treat those employees equitably. Even larger inequities exist with judicial salaries. The Hayes study informed us that judicial salaries have fallen disturbingly far behind both the legislative and executive branches. We have always known that the private market far exceeded judicial salaries, but we were frankly surprised when we compared other state employees of equal or lesser responsibility. Many are paid tens of thousands of dollars more than any judge. And now it's difficult to find comparable positions of a judge in the executive branch, but just as an example, there are employees in the Attorney General's office, ANI, Workforce Services, Game and Fish, Oil and Gas Commission, Department of Corrections, the retirement system, 11 employees in the Department of Health, each of whom can and do appear before our judges to have their disputes resolved and their rights and responsibilities determined. And they are paid more than a Supreme Court justice, in some cases $30,000 to $40,000 more. The same is true for the legislature's highest paid employees, whose pay is $5,000 to $26,000 more than a Supreme Court judge. Now, please do not hear us to say that those people are not earning their money. I am sure that they are. But as we examine the last 20 years, it becomes clear that this inequity is really chronic. Here are the facts. From 1990 to 2010, Wyoming's cost of living increased 209%, and its per capita personal income increased 183%. The average state employee salary increased 132%. Over that same period of time, a district judge's salary increased by only 82%. Those district judges are essentially making less than half of what they were making 20 years ago. Now, it's probably fair to say that this situation is not the result of a conscious decision on the part of this legislature, but it is instead caused by the manner in which judicial salaries are considered. Only infrequently, and then increases that are really needed to keep up, are deemed politically too large, and so judges are forced to take what they can get. This inequity must be recognized and corrected so that the three co-equal branches of government are paid equitably. For the long term, the legislature should work with the judicial branch to develop a judicial salary plan that avoids the periodic necessity for judges to essentially beg for salary increases just to keep up. None of us like that situation. To become judges, we are asking attorneys to leave successful practices to take on a job that is, frankly, less attractive and more difficult than ever before. And I can tell you from experience that as I have worked to recruit candidates for judicial openings, fewer and fewer top-flight attorneys are interested. In the larger districts, we have historically had 30 to 40 applicants for a district court opening. And now we are seeing 10 to 15. For the last circuit court opening in a large district, we had only 6 applicants. Now, we've been lucky to maintain a high quality of applicants, but I truly fear that if salaries do not keep pace, this will not continue. For the next 3 to 6 years, over half our judges will retire, and the faces that you see of the judiciary in the balcony will look much different than they do today. Fewer lines and less gray hair. Correcting this pay gap is not only important to those who serve now, but is critical to the future of this branch of government. Although we know revenues are limited, we also know this body will consider spending millions more than we're asking for on optional projects. Equal justice for all is not optional. It is a core function of our government. Senate File 40 proposes increases in judicial salaries to reduce that gap, and we thank the sponsors of that legislation and urge the adoption. It provides for salaries for district and Supreme Courts that are comparable to the executive branch. However, and this is important, the Board of Judicial Policy and Administration, which represents all levels of the courts, strongly believes that the bill as currently drafted does not provide for an adequate increase in circuit judge salaries, and we urge that Senate File 40 be amended to retain the proportionality of salaries of the levels of courts that has always existed. We need to encourage quality applicants for circuit courts, and the proposed salary structure in that bill will not do it. Don't forget that we recruit district judges and ultimately Supreme Court judges from those ranks. In fact, two of our former chief justices, Justice Larry Lehman and Justice Barton Voigt, started out as circuit court judges. Each of our judges strives to provide equal justice for all Wyoming citizens. Case by case, they must decide whether the other two branches of government are conforming their actions to the dictates of our Constitution. Tough questions are presented in each case, and the right answer is often hard to find. I read a story recently about a Texas judge that demonstrated just how challenging those questions can be. In Mount Vernon, Texas, Drummond's Bar began constructing an expansion of their building to increase their business. In response, a local church started a campaign to block the bar from expanding with petitions and prayers. And work progressed right up until the week before the grand opening, when lightning struck the bar and burned it to the ground. Afterwards, the church folks were rather smug in their outlook, bragging about the power of prayer, until the bar owner sued the church on the grounds that the church was ultimately responsible for the demise of his building through the direct or indirect means. And in its reply to the court, the church vehemently denied all responsibility or any connection to the building's demise. So the judge read through the plaintiff's complaint and the defendant's reply. At the opening hearing, he commented, "I don't know how I'm going to decide this, but it appears from the paperwork that we have a bar owner who believes in the power of prayer and an entire church congregation that now does not." So, as you consider what a judge is worth, picture in your mind the job judges do every day. The circuit courts handle over 170,000 cases in which they determine the rights of creditors, whether a substance abuser will get treatment, or how best to protect a victim of domestic violence. They manage clerk's offices that handle over $30 million a year. And for most Wyoming citizens, the circuit judge is the face of the judiciary. In just the seemingly simple act of setting a bond, something they do probably 30 or 40 times a week, they must balance public safety with the impact of incarceration on an individual's job and their family's loss of support. And rather than trying to describe to you the importance of their decisions, I'd like you to hear it from one Wyoming citizen whose life was changed by a circuit judge. In a letter, she said, "Dear Judge, I want to let you know you saved me from being the next young woman on the obituary page. When I was on probation, my husband divorced me and took my babies, and I planned to drink my life away. I was arrested for public intoxication and came before your court again. And you told me I was dangerous, and I pleaded for another chance. Thank you for not giving me that chance. I am in a jail-based program now, and my life really does have a purpose." Thousands of individuals like that are impacted and sometimes saved by our circuit courts. Over the years since you have created this system, these judges have grown in ability and in stature in their communities, and we owe them our thanks. In over 20,000 cases a year, we ask district judges to solve the insoluble problems of our society one person at a time. When I asked a district judge to describe his job, he said, "I sit at my desk each morning and begin to sort through people's lives. I determine who gets property and who gets money. I decide what's in the best interest of children in juvenile cases. I profoundly affect families in divorce cases. I decide who goes to prison and who doesn't. And this is within the bounds of a system that provides substantial discretion, knowing that what is perceived as fairness and justice in my community depends on my decisions." If you look at a typical schedule for a Monday morning for one of our district judges, as I have, you would be stunned by the breadth of issues they face and the deadly serious nature of the decisions they must make. One such day, one of our busy district judges arraigned 10 defendants charged with everything from assault on a police officer with a deadly weapon to a fourth DUI felony to 7 different drug crimes. Then he held hearings in 4 juvenile cases, 1 child abuse case, 2 divorce matters, 2 probation revocations, and a sentencing, the most solemn exercise of judicial discretion. One of the most difficult decisions a district court has to make is which of 2 deserving parents will have the joy of custody of the children that they love. The wisdom of one of our district judges is shown in the statement he made at the end of a difficult divorce case. He said, "I want you to know that there is no case on the docket more important than this one. No case with higher stakes than the well-being of these good children. This decision by the court today is the absolute best application of the law to your facts that I can do. I know that one side doesn't like this decision, but it is the hope of this court that you will respect it, respect each other, and most of all, respect your children. Because there will come a day that you will meet 2 judges you do respect, and those judges will be these 2 children. Please conduct yourself when you leave here so that you, when you look your children in the eye 20 years from now, you can say, 'Everything I did was out of love for you.'" Court adjourned. Now, I think you will agree that that is the kind of district judge that we want to attract and retain. And I would like to ask the circuit and district judges who are with us here today to let us thank them for their efforts and stand and be recognized. Thank you. Further, consider that every one of these trial court decisions, as well as the action of the legislature and the executive branch, are subject to review and ultimate disposition by the five individuals who are entrusted by our Constitution as the court of last resort. Ask yourself, what kind of individual do you want sitting on that bench? What are they worth? What is equal justice for all worth? Equal justice for all, those are not just hallowed words. They are the creed of every judge. Judges struggle every day in every case to do justice. Of all the values that support our democracy and direct your decisions as to how to spend taxpayer money, justice must rank as one of the most important. In the words of Daniel Webster, spoken over 150 years ago, "Justice, sir, is the great interest of man on earth. It is the ligament that holds civilized man together and civilized nations together. Wherever her temple stands, so long as it is honored, there is a foundation for the improvement and the progress of our race." It is this same truth that weighs every day on the shoulders of the men and women we ask to be our judges. They trust you to honor their efforts to provide equal justice for all of Wyoming's citizens. Thank you.
Chief Justice Kite, on behalf of the members of the legislature, I thank you for attending this joint session and for your message to us. Thank you again. Senator Bebout, Representative Semek and Korberg, would you please escort the governor from the chamber? Senator Rothfuss, Representatives Green and Burkhart, will you please escort the Chief Justice from the chamber? Mr. Speaker, I thank you and the members of the House of Representatives for being our host this morning. Senate Majority Leader Roth.
Mr. President, I move that this joint session be dissolved.
Do I have a second to the motion?
Mr. President.
Mr. Minority Leader.
I second that motion.
All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. This motion is carried. Majority Leader Ross.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate be in recess until 2 p.m.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed say no.
No.
The Senate is recessed until 2 p.m.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader Lubnow.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House be in recess until 2 p.m.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House is recessed until 2 p.m.